Welcome to Reflections and Wonders, Revisiting Luke's Gospel, a podcast that's just me wondering off the top of my head about Luke's Gospel for the second time in 3 years. My name is Norm Seeley, and I'm a minister at Jubilee United Church in Toronto, Canada. I've been a minister for over 30 years, and every year my thoughts and wonderings change. So, Monday to Friday, I'll be reading my way through Luke, even though I read through Luke in 2021. But the thing is, the world's changed. I've changed, and so I expect that my wonderings will have changed as well. I don't have notes, and I haven't checked back to see what I said 3 years ago, but I am kind of looking forward to hearing what I say now. Or more importantly, what I think God may be saying to me now. I do want to thank Drew Winters for the music and you for joining me. I will do my best to keep my wanderings between 18 and 30 minutes, but every once in a while we may go a couple minutes long. You should also know that this is an audio version of a video blog that I will have recorded 2 weeks ago. So, if you want to see what I look like when I'm wandering, well, you can find me on my YouTube channel. Just search Norm Seeley. That's Norm Seeley, S-E-L-I. Or even easier, find me on the Jubilee United Church website, www.jubileeunited.ca. And if you want to support this and other digital ministries of Jubilee United Church, well, you can make a donation through canadahelps.org. We are Jubilee United Church, the one in Ontario. So now, let's see what Luke has to say this time around. Today we're in Luke chapter 17, verses 11 to 19. When we left off the gospel, there was a story, an example of somebody who had several employees coming in from the field. The question was, would you, you know, as they came in from the field, would you invite them to come to your table? Because, you know, they've been out in the field working. Or would you expect them to go into the kitchen and prepare your food and come out and bring you your food because that's their job? And then afterwards, they would eat. And this seemed to me to be an opportunity to reflect on the desire to be rewarded for what's basically my job, right? So we don't brag about being kind, loving, and faithful. That's what God created us to be. So we're just doing our jobs, in a sense. So that's kind of where we left off. And now we shift gears. So here it is, Luke 17, 11 to 19. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." I love this little story. Because I love this little story, I've preached it a bunch of times. So it's tricky for me to wonder about this because I have torn this story apart in my mind so many ways. So I apologize if I fall into a rhythm. I will try not to preach. When I first heard this story as a kid growing up with this story, well, it seems to be a fairly obvious story. Right? 10 people are in distress. 10 lepers, Jesus heals them, only one thinks to be grateful, to show gratitude. And wouldn't you know it, it's a Samaritan, not a Jew, not one of the family. It's the foreigner, the outsider who does that. And so it's an invitation to think about gratitude and who shows gratitude and all of those things. And you know what? If you spent the day well, it doesn't have to be the whole day. If you spend a little while reflecting on this story and just thinking about gratitude and how you show gratitude and when you show gratitude and when you might show gratitude but often don't. I mean, I can do that. Because there are things for which I am grateful that I almost act as if I take them for granted. You know, like the lepers. And then there are times that I do go out of my way to be grateful. And I find it affects not only the person to whom I show gratitude, but it affects me. Because sometimes it's not a person that I'm sharing my gratitude with. It might be a beautiful day. And I am grateful for that day. I am grateful to God. I am oddly grateful for the day. I am glad of things in my life. Good things. Sometimes I'm glad of the timing of bad things. If this had happened earlier, I would not be able to handle it, but it's happened now, and so I have enough money in my bank that I can pay to have that thing fixed, or I have the time now to spend with this person who is dear to me and needs me, or I have time to go to the doctors to tend to what's ailing me. So there's always a way to be grateful, and I think that that's a big part of the story. So, got it. Done. And under five, let's go. All right, so the other things in this story, though, that jump out at me, and I love them, and they really get me thinking. So we know by the end of the story that there are 10 lepers. We know that at least one of them is a Samaritan, but not all of them. Otherwise, there'd be no distinction by saying, oh, and the Samaritan's the one who came to give thanks. So we have lepers who are both Jews and Samaritans. And you understand that Jews and Samaritans have nothing in common. That is to say, they despise each other. They are the Hatfields and the McCoys. Does that work for you? They are at odds with each other. They do share a common faith. They are descendants of Abraham. But there has been a rift. So they practice their faith a little bit differently. But more importantly, they despise each other. So when I say Hatfields and McCoys, in my family tradition, they're Roman Catholic and Protestant. For some, they might be Sunni and Shia. Wherever there's a division there and an enmity, that's the case here. And we take it seriously. Oh my God, we take it seriously. Everything that they do is an offense to our faith or our culture or our very being. And we jump on them right away. However, here are 10 people who have overcome that. How have they overcome it? Well, they have found an identity that is more significant to them. They're lepers. They are all suffering a debilitating, isolating, ultimately fatal disease. And that's more important than being a Jew or a Samaritan in terms of their identity. Now, they haven't given up their faith. They've asked Jesus for help. So they believe in God. They believe in the potential for healing. They believe in that. So they haven't given up on the faith. They've just given up on the cultural limitations of their faith because they realize there's a greater identity. For them, it is in their leprosy. But I sometimes wonder about that. And in terms of our relationships as Christians with other Christians, I mentioned Protestant Catholic, but it can be United Church of Canada and Baptists. I don't think there's great enmity there, but there is a difference. Southern Baptist Convention, like there's all sorts of different divisions, denominations, and we focus on that thing that separates us. The Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, right? I mean, it's not truly all about the filioque clause in the creed on whether the Spirit proceeds after the Father and the Son or not, but that's the one that they jump on, absolutely. Instead of focusing on how much that they actually have in common, these lepers have this disease in common. They have recognized that that goes beyond their cultural differences. I think we could also go in a positive way, recognizing that we are all children of God. We are all part of creation. We are all deeply spiritual, whether we acknowledge it or and explore it or not. I mean, there are ways for us to look for a greater identity that helps us overcome the cultural enmity that could be there. I mean, I'm not saying we should deny our cultural differences, but I don't know that we have to use them as weapons. We don't have to hit each other with them. And I see it happen. I'll see it happen in a peace march. I will see it happen in a rally for children, for an end to sex trafficking. Sometimes it's a rally for justice, right? And you will see Muslims and Christians, Sikhs and Buddhists, Hindus, atheists, all sorts of people locking arms in that common cause, because in this moment, justice or love or whatever the issue is more important than our cultural religious differences. And I think that's a wonderful thing, and that this story reminds me of that. We might find it in our suffering, but we can also find it in our glory, in our gratitude, in our joy. We're all part of creation. So I like that this story invites me to think about that. I can spend a lot of time thinking about that, and it's helpful for me when I run into somebody with whom I differ in terms of religious outlook or cultural expression, whatever it is, and go, right, so what do we actually have in common? I don't need them to give up their practices that are different from mine, nor do I need to apologize or give up mine, necessarily, unless they're very ill-informed. But we can still connect together. Because they did. The lepers did. The other stuff that I notice in this, it's interesting when they say, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us, and he says, go show yourselves to the priests. So, it doesn't say he healed them, and they should go show themselves to the priests. It says, go show yourselves to the priests. Now, for a leper to be welcome back into community, right? So lepers are ostracized. You can't have a leper around you. It's contagious. That's why lepers are outside the city walls. That's why they're clustered together. That's why they rang bells so you'd stay clear from them, clear of them. So if your leprosy cleared up, which did happen, because leprosy also described a variety of skin ailments, didn't necessarily always apply to what we call leprosy. It might have been a different thing, a more mild thing. And it could clear up. And if it cleared up, then you should be able to go back to your family. You should be able to be back in town, and you should not have to, you know, warn people. You don't have to ring a bell or whatever it is. But that authorization came from the priest. So you went to the priest, and you showed yourself, and you were examined. And yes, you were clean. And then from the temple, it was said, yep, Norm is now clean. And so I was now welcome back in. So that was the custom. That was the way they did things. So Jesus has basically said, go and show them. But there's a moment where they go, yeah, but you haven't done anything yet. But the implication is, yeah, by the time you get there, it will happen. So Jesus is calling them to act faithfully. Not see for themselves first and then go to the priest, but go to the priest, knowing that by the time you get there, you're going to be fine. I like that. And I find that challenging because I don't want to say I'm reluctant, but I'm cautious. If you tell me something's going to happen, I kind of like to make sure it's happened before I go out on a limb, right? If you say, don't worry, Norm, I know you need this for your presentation. I'll have it to you by 2 o'clock. I'm probably going to arrange my presentation for 4 o'clock because I want to get the thing first, make sure that I've got it. That just seems to be responsible. I'm not going to book my presentation at 2, assuming it's going to arrive right on time. And most people go, well, yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely, responsibly, sure. But when it comes to faith, when it comes to living faithfully, when it comes to living kindly in the world, if somebody needs my help, do I wait and assess that now that I know I have the things to help them, I will go and help them. That seems responsible. You don't want to make empty promises. And yet, sometimes I think the better thing to do is to go and realize that once you get there, you will have what is needed. Somebody calls me and says, we've just had really, really bad news. And this person, the love of my life, you know them, Norm, they've got 2 weeks left to live. And they'd really like to see you. I don't know that I have anything to offer them in that moment. That's a very big moment. I'm going to show up and do what? Cheer them up? I maybe would rather spend a little bit of time making a plan, figuring it all out. The problem is they don't have time for me to make a plan. They need me now. And so I show up, trusting that God is coming with me and that God will guide me and that what I do there will be driven by the Spirit. I show up not knowing yet. Go, show yourselves to the priest. Go to this person in need and know that when you get there, you will be equipped. It's a tough one. And there are times that I do need to wait till I have the package before I can deliver it. But there are also times when I need to just show up and trust that God will be with me and that I will be able to show myself to the priest fully healed, or indeed show myself to the person in need fully equipped. Doesn't mean I have all the answers, doesn't mean I can fix anything, but I am present and I will not be shattered because God will be with me, because the love that I share is actually God's love. Because that's really who they need. That's the engagement they're looking for, is God, not me. I am the one who can help facilitate that, perhaps. So, that matters to me. I guess the other piece in this, in line with that too, Jesus does send them to the priest. Jesus has come to change a lot of things, but he's not throwing out the traditions and the rituals of the established church. He has come to fulfill the law. He is definitely wanting to reshape the faith, right? He wants to reform it. There's no question in my mind about that. And yet, he doesn't say, hang out with me, you're going to be fine shortly. Never mind the priest. That's the old way. We're not doing that anymore. No, he says, go and show yourselves. He is not asking them to rebel against the faith of their childhood. He's not demanding of them to recant and join his group. No, he's working within that framework and he's respecting that. And that can be a challenge sometimes too when we meet people from other faith groups or other cultures or just other families who have ways of doing things. We say, you know what, no, don't listen to your mother. She's wrong on that. Except this person has spent their whole lives listening to their mothers. And so you want to say, all right, so your mother's telling you this. And you hear why she's saying that, right? And talk about that this is your mother who loves you and she's trying to make this work. But it's not going to work for you. So you need to go and have a conversation with your mother. Or, now, please, I know you can imagine all sorts of examples where that advice would be absolutely wrong. But think there is a place to respect the context. And we don't have to simply throw out everything because we have a new vision, a new way of doing things. Jesus intentionally respects the old way. He's going to reform it, absolutely reshape it. Ultimately, his followers are going to go in a different direction because this old wineskin will not hold the new wine. But he's not throwing the wineskin out until we've tried it. Right? So, wow, there's a mixed metaphor and a mess up of what Jesus was probably talking about when he talked about new wine and old wineskins. But the point is, it's not just an automatic out with the old, in with the new. No, it's like, well, wait a second. No, we can transition here. We don't have to disrespect. The number of people that I have in my faith community, in my congregations, pretty much my whole career, lots and lots, and I think I've mentioned this recently, actually, lots and lots of Roman Catholics. Raised in the Roman Catholic Church, in the Roman Catholic tradition, still might go to the occasional Mass, but also come into my community on a regular basis, and we are their primary spiritual community. And one of the reasons that people have said, when I've talked to them about this, yeah, but you don't disrespect the Roman Catholic faith. And they can talk about why they're no longer in the church or no longer following that faith the same way, but they were raised in it and they cherish it and they love it. It just can't bring them into that spiritual awareness that they are looking for. But if they came in and I told them and I sounded like someone who says, okay, so those people are all wrong and all idiots, this is the way and the only way, they wouldn't be able to make their connection here either, because that way is their way. And yes, they've grown beyond it, and yet still, I've grown beyond my mother, but don't say nasty things about her to me. You know, when I say I've grown beyond her, I mean, I think for myself, I have different ideas and different thoughts. But still my mom. This example here is, yeah, especially to the Jews in that group of 10 lepers. No, this is your faith. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. I'm going to give you a new thing that you can take into your faith. But we're not going to disrespect it. That's your mom. I get it. Go to the priest. Show yourself. So I hear that in the story. Others may not, but I do. Just a desire to respect the old ways and not just sort of throw them out. I had a colleague once in the middle of a sermon said, well, in Augustine and all those other old white guys, we don't need to think about that. And just dismissed all of that. Never mind the question of whether Augustine was white or not. But anyway, the point was this person just in an offhand remark was throwing away about 1,600 years of faith, theology, and scholarship. Just like that. Which, yes, to me seemed ridiculous. But more importantly, there were a half dozen people within that congregation in listening to that to that presentation of that sermon who shut down. They couldn't listen to another thing that person said afterwards. They were in equal measures astounded that someone would say that, but also insulted. You don't have to agree with Augustine, but to throw it out disrespectfully is also a problem. Anyway, the other little thing I guess is the closing line, and I have preached it at length, so I'm not going to give it too much time because I will fall into a sermon. But when Jesus says, "Get up and go on your way, your faith has made you well," what are you talking about? I was well on the way to the priests. right? I was healed. Go on your way, your faith has made you well, implies that the other nine are not made well. But surely their leprosy has been is in remission. It's gone. It's been cleared up. Right? Surely it's gone now. It didn't come back because they didn't come back and say thank you. And when you look at it that way, you realize that there is physical health and there is spiritual health. And those others might be physically fine, but they're not well. At least that's what I get from this. This the one who came back and was grateful, the one who praised God, the one who sees God in the world, right? They came back to Jesus. Why? Jesus is God in the world. So for me, this says that you know it is seeing God in the world. It's being aware of that, celebrating that God is in the world. That is what actually makes us well, whether we have leprosy or whether we have clear skin, whether we have a month to live or there's no end date as far as we know in terms of how long we're going to live. Whatever our ability, disability, it is seeing God in the world that truly makes us well. And that's worth thinking about all the time. And I do. I ask myself, am I seeing God in the world? Where and how? And that's where I feel at one with the universe. I also like it when my knee doesn't hurt. But whether my knee hurts or not, seeing God in the world is what makes me well. I'm going to leave it there. I think that's enough for Monday, don't you? So let me offer a prayer and see what you make of this little story. Let us pray. Loving God, we thank you for your presence in the world, and we are grateful. We thank you also for your presence in this time of wandering, and we are grateful. Grateful as we hear your word emerge from our imaginative engagement with these stories. We thank you for the way that your word emerges and makes old stories new, alerts us to your presence in our lives and in the world all around us. God, as we hear your word, may we follow and may we grow in faith. We pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit. Amen. So that is enough for me today, but I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Until I see you, God bless. Please know that God sees you, knows you, and loves you exactly as you are, exactly where you are. And know that God's love doesn't just stop with you. It actually moves through you into the world, making it possible for others to see God in the world. You make a difference. So God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow.